HomeWorks Premium Thrift is a shopping experience unlike any other. Browse our 12,000 square foot store for gently used selection of clothing, shoes, books, kitchenware, home decor, furniture, appliances, and more. We offer free pickup of large loads and large items such as furniture and appliances. We are located in Douglasville on Route 422, and we are open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30, and closed on Sunday. Visit us at homeworkspremiumthrift.org. Like us on Facebook. We hope you'll stop in and check us out. You'll be glad you did. We help you help others.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets. So come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.
Regina Riggs serves as executive director of Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays. We call it PFOX. She works directly with ex-gays and their parents, ex-gay ministry leaders, and many others struggling with their sexual identity who are seeking help and hope in their community. As executive director, Regina has helped thousands of parents and gays and ex-gays connect through support groups and impacted the lives of a record number of ex-gays. Thank you so much for being with us. How did you get involved with PFOX? Share with us your story.
My story.
Yes, I want to hear your story. And please speak loudly into your...
Okay.
We don't want to miss anything.
Oh,
because, you know, this is really cutting edge. You know, as Christians, we need to be where people are hurting.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we need to be aware of, my background is I have a niece that was in a homosexual lifestyle for 7 years in a commitment relationship, the whole bit, which she walked away from, and she's now the proud mother of a three-year-old little girl. My own son became involved when he went away to college and graduate school and identifies still today as homosexual, someone with same-sex attraction. So that began my journey 15 years ago, not one that I was expected, someone who served on their parish council for 6 years, spoke at church services, et cetera, et cetera. Very involved in the marriage encounter and keeping marriages together. So you might say I was shocked, began to question my faith. You know, here I am putting in all these hours. I'm devoting my life to keeping families together and mine's falling apart because that's how it felt.
Mm-hmm.
We suspected and actually had information for our son to go and speak to someone. And what I did was bring up that topic. And it was heart-wrenching because he said, how could you think something like that about me? Went off the deep end, thought we were being accusatory, not helpful. So we were up all night talking and letting him know that we loved him, but, you know, did not support the homosexual lifestyle or behavior. They were dangerous, and we were up till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And then I began to look for help. Thought, oh, my goodness, what's that there? How do we parents react? How can you maintain what your Christian and biblical beliefs are and have this child that you've raised and loved your whole life come forward and, you know, give up his faith, give up everything? It just didn't make sense. Well, of course, unwanted same-sex attractions, which many young people struggle with doesn't make sense. I mean, it's their interpretation of what they are perceiving in the public, as we all know is very dangerous right now. And that perception is pushed in your school. Churches have ignored it for years. So what does a parent do? Well, fortunately, I happen to be watching the cable channel and the founding father of Exodus, Frank Wortham, who ran a ministry in California, was speaking. Well, they put the phone number up there. I called that night. We're still friends today. He and his wife are wonderful people. She has a son that still identifies after 25 years. So I found that person that knew what I was experiencing, knew what it felt like, and could give you hope and keep you on an even keel, because they, you know, gay community, your children, the school, try to draw you off topic. Well, nobody wants these feelings. Well, don't we all agree with that? But let's address how they came about, which is what society, gay activists, many of gay-affirming churches and profess to be evangelical Christians want you to think. They want you to think they can't change. They want you to believe that God is happy with them, made them that way. And so when this first hits home, it's not just confusing, it's devastating. And we have to step back and maybe bite our tongue a little bit and look for the resources, look to people like Frank, who has overcome those relationships, those gay relationships, walked out of that lifestyle, and he is one of the wonderful godly men, and his wife, Anita, who you would ever hope to meet. But most of us didn't know that. I sure didn't know that. And believe me, in the Washington, D.C. area where I live, it was not talked about. You weren't supposed to know that. So how do we get a message out? How do we help families? How do we help those who don't want to live with unwanted same-sex attraction, who seek to overcome them, who want a family, who want all of the things that we wanted for our children? That's my story. And that is what I work to provide: help, resources, and understanding. If somebody calls me and says, this is what my child just said, I can go to them and I can say, well, haven't they told you this one yet? You know, because I've heard them all, believe me. And that's what we need. We need that support. So in our new mission, which is our Safe Exit Program, purpose is for the church to provide that support for the families, for those people sitting in the pews who are struggling, who don't want to admit they have these, who don't want to be judged, and who probably have a very good idea of what scriptures, and it's not what they're living. They're torn. So that sole purpose, starting this education process, of sending speakers. We have wonderful speakers out of this lifestyle. Would love to send them to the churches. Let them give their testimony. Let them provide the resources we have, because that's what we need to do. We have got to stop this downward spiral that we have been in for the last 6 years. I mean, in the last less than a year, we've added 20-some churches. The churches have now been told you can't preach against this, and is it not in all of the states? I mean, the federal government taking away our state's rights, our rights as Christians to provide help.
That's right. Regina, I know that as Christians, we believe that it is our freedom of speech, and it's also our freedom of religion, to teach our children that marriage is between one man and one woman. But does PFOX explain the research that exists that says that, you know, the homosexual lifestyle is not a gene? You are indeed not born that way. And because the other side is telling us that they are made that way. But then I would argue, is an adulterer, is there a gene for the adulterer gene? Is there a gene for the polygamy gene? This is just, it's sinful. I know that's not politically correct to say, but it's a sinful lifestyle.
Well, the thing that's upsetting, and by the way, yes, we do. If you were to go to the PFOX website, you can read about the Safe Exit Program. But if you go to general resources and click on brochures, we have a brochure that tells you that there is no genetic cause, no gay gene, no DNA, no medical test that says, yep, you're born that way.
That's right.
So we do provide hope. We do provide brochures, and it's called Consexual Orientation Change. And it's gated. We have resources coming at us through the CDC, the APA from 2008 and 2013. What people don't understand is when you hear born that way, cannot change, this is what the APA says. We're talking studies that were never replicated, that were done by gay-affirming or gay scientists themselves, or the idea of attacking therapy for people who want to seek it that are minors. There were seven people on the board reviewing therapy causes, okay? Of those seven, six were openly gay. Do you think they were going to say, gee, I think it's a great idea?
right.
position, heal thyself.
That seems biased.
They are not about to do this. Then we had the billboard incident. Unfortunately, I can't play those for you because you'd probably lose your license to be on the air. But I had almost 300 emails. I had 12 attacks against Christians, Christ, against our organization, against Hamilton Strategies, our marketing firm, threats, death threats. Gonna burn your billboard down. We put a billboard up that says identical twins, one gay, one not. Science proves nobody's born gay. And that's simply a fact.
It's a fact.
Well, that went worldwide. I think we had 48,000 hits. And they even called the bill telling them they were going to burn their billboard down. And you want to know what Jenny has had a recent change. The people run, our governor actually has performed gay wedding ceremonies. So do you think that they could get any support? Well, if they burn the billboard down, call us back. We are not talking about nice people.
Right. Well, I was just going to ask you that question. I thought that the LGBT or these people were loving. I thought that they were accepting of all views.
Absolutely not.
Right. That's what I'm hearing from you is, and you know, go and get your own billboard. Again, it's the freedom of speech. We live in the United States of America where we like to present the truth. And the truth is that you have two twins that are in the womb and one is homosexual and one is not. Clearly, there is not a gene. There is no scientific proof for this. So we have the freedom of speech to get a billboard. If they want to put up another billboard, go right ahead, but leave our billboard alone.
Well, and unfortunately, what we found out later, because we, for reasons of protection, we do actually have identical twins on our website sharing their testimony. There are powerful testimonies. If you go to the video testimonies of a woman who lived that lifestyle for 25 years, she's been out for 20 years and is a devout Christian now. But if I were to have put them up there, now mind you, it wasn't even my picture, it was just our organization that put this up. How safe would it be for these women? We were quite concerned.
So sure.
We bought a film or a picture, a Photoshop. The man turns out to be gay. Now, he doesn't even live in this country. So what people need to understand is the level and the depth to which they will go to undermine your Christian and science, technology, anything that they believe is going to provide truth. They're out to stop and don't think otherwise. They found this man in South Africa. So then they went after us saying, that, well, the billboard has to be a lie because the man was really gay. Well, no, that doesn't have to be the case.
Right. That's not an argument.
You watch TV and newspapers all day long. Do you think that the people there are really using that product?
But you know what's sad about this is that they are trying to distract you from your mission.
Absolutely.
And you're fighting against their foolishness. And your mission is to really help people that are at a crossroads and they're really struggling. You know, talk to me a little bit about some of the states that are trying to create bills that would not allow you to talk to people. And you call this talk therapy, right? I know that the state of Virginia recently halted a bill to ban talk therapy.
We killed it. And I shouldn't say that, but I actually loved the articles that came out of gay periodicals and press releases because they said Virginia bashes anti-therapy bill. It didn't make it out of a single committee. And in the middle of the ad is a beautiful color picture of our billboard saying nobody's born gay. So I thought, well, you know, I'm grateful to the Lord for that because let's face it, people read those gay periodicals and aren't going to come to read PFOX. And now they've seen some. And then maybe they'll go to the website and they'll say, what is this all about? Who are these? And they will find hope. So thank you, advocates. Thank you, Huffington Post, for assaulting us by using our words and a color picture that says.
Right. They're spreading your truth.
They're reaching people that I personally, so thank you. So those are just, you know, we need to put the billboard back up. We are going to do another fundraising and we are going to move it and we will take the Photoshop off and we probably will use true twins, but our side needs learning. They were quoting a Bailey study, which is a pro-gay study that was never replicated of 100 twins and because it says if we're both gay. Well, you and I know I have twin grandchildren, so I do know a few differences, but the studies that we are using was 2013, 20,000 from Australia. Australia, and countries that participated in a study. Less than 10% of identical twins were both gay. So, you know, with science, the concordance rate has to be 100. Identical twins share one fact, so no one didn't get hormones that the other one didn't get. All things are identical. What isn't identical is once they're born is the environment they're raised in and what they are being taught and led believe.
Sure.
That's the difference.
Sure. Absolutely. So are you going primarily just into churches?
We do testify. I mean, we have sent people to give testimony, ex-gay members who, because we work with a lot of ministry. You know, we have ministry leaders in Oklahoma, California, Texas, Arizona, Ohio. So there are several of us, Oregon. So what we have done is we've encouraged ministry leaders and their pastor to go and stop people, right? People who are unhappy have a right to seek therapy, and talk therapy is just that. Now, these bills that they're trying to introduce doesn't say that you can't provide gay-affirming therapy, which the APA tells you has not been proven to be effective either. But we don't talk about that. And so we have to get better at protecting our rights as Christians, because do you really think that if we stop, say, a David Pickup, who is on our website, and he is a licensed therapist, he is an ex-gay, he was molested as a child, spent years in therapy coming out of them, back to school to get a PhD, and is a licensed therapist. Now, why is his voice, having lived that life, coming out of that life, and being able to understand and provide care to those seeking help, why isn't his voice, his opinion, important? And that's what we need to do.
Yes.
We need to make sure our people have the opportunity, because he is a Christian. And you want to know what's going to happen? They may stop him in California or New Jersey or someplace else, but you think they're not. What is their real purpose? And that's what I tried to instill in the Christian community, not just the churches, but we as believers. What makes you think they're worried about the science? What is it that gay activists, they want the approval? That Sodom and Gomorrah was about being impolite? They do not want to recognize Matthew 19:4, where Jesus says, don't you remember in the beginning my Father created them, male and female? That's Jesus.
That's right.
And I'm tired of hearing that, you know, well, it's, you know, it's just about therapy, and you can pray away the gay, and you can do this, and you can do that, because that's the terms that the gays are using against us.
Mm-hmm.
What? Real prize, the gold ring for them, as we as Christians, gay marriage, adoption, sexual alignment surgeries,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. It is wish, whatever, however you want to put it, body of Christ. We are the people that they have not been willing to stand on Scripture, because I know what Jesus said about marriage. I know what he said about creation. I know the truth, and the truth can set them free, and they don't want the truth. And all of this legislative stuff, that has to do with, yeah, sure, they don't want you to be able to go talk to somebody like you who lived that life and who knows the truth. They don't want you to hear from him as a Christian.
Right. And can you talk to us a little bit about strugglers versus seekers?
Yeah. Strugglers are the people that are sitting in your church who have not been, are not involved, okay, and haven't been many for years in behavior. The Bible speaks very clearly about sinful behaviors, adultery, sodomy.
Sure. Fornication.
All of it.
All sexual immorality.
Absolutely. So what we are trying to do is support those people, have them continue to follow the word, and in God's time, and that's the hard part, certainly has been for me, God's all things. Can't put a watch on the Lord, and you know what? If he could make someone gay, he could make them ex-gay. So, you know, that argument just falls on deaf ears. So that struggler needs our support. He needs to know that we understand, and he needs to know there are other ex-gays church, that there are organizations he speak openly. There are dates. There's a Melissa M. who's lesbian, a wife with small children. There are people like Stephen Black, Southern Baptist minister, runs an ex-gay and has five grand. There is hope. So we need to keep that. We need the churches make known and deep shout silence.
And I like that you're doing this in a loving way. You know, we're not at our churches. We have a lot of different programs. We have the people who are struggling with divorce. We have the people who are struggling with pornography. And yes, now we need to provide for those people who are struggling with the sin issue of being attracted to the same sex. I mean, this is the world that we live in today. And you're fighting at the front lines, Regina, and I thank you for that. And I think that, you know, the church church should be at the front lines with this in a most loving way, as you are doing. So if we want to get in touch with you, Regina, where do we go?
If you go, you can go to www.pfoc.org, and you will see a link on, you'll see the link to the videos, questions. And these are all coming. Folks have walked away, no longer are living a homosexual life. That's a wonderful place for the seekers to go. Those who want information, those who are curious and why change, or family members like who interact with church. Or that's the issue. Let's make this a home for everybody and provide the resources nation by going to our website, watching those videos. I cannot tell you how wonderful they are. These are all people that are first out of that lifestyle, couple on there, John's signs. So there are special children with that available. A young couple who I've known for reach dates, the downside of what can still married, put marriage together, travels world, offering hope that or he has been reached. We have wonderful people are walking, living test power of God. Anybody.
Right. Everybody. Whether you're steeped in homosexuality or you're steeped in pornography or you're steeped in being a gossip.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest problems that we find, which is why we're trying to help keep talk therapy legal, is because many of these have been labeled. You know, you're the man that's 5'2" and not a football player, it's a little guy. You're the tall woman who plays basketball. People are being labeled gay, lesbian, or effeminate, creating gender identity issues. Are we labeled any?
That's right. Well, and once upon a time, I think that, you know, perhaps they were just a man who had an affinity for the arts. We wouldn't have said that that's a homosexual man. But now you have this very loud message that says, if you are a man in the arts, or if you're not, well, gosh, they even have some football players now that are coming and saying that they are homosexual. So really, we can't even point to any specific characteristic, can we anymore, Regina? But I think what I hear you saying is that just because somebody might label you a lesbian or a homosexual man does not mean that you are so. You were created for so much more than that. God doesn't make any mistakes. He made you a man and he made you a woman. I mean, even a little five-year-old can see that we have unique differences and unique purposes.
Exactly. And what happens is if you have doubt because I'm not the football player, I don't like Barbie, and people say, well, maybe you're gay, create self-doubt.
Right. Well, my fear, Regina,
they don't need to hear.
Right. My fear now is that I have a friend who has a child at her school that at a very young age, at 6 years old, they're starting to give this little boy hormones to turn him into a girl because they think already that he's wants to be a little girl. And I just think that that is just a recipe. I know that it's a recipe for disaster. I feel that that is child abuse.
It is child abuse. And quite frankly, when you, Denise Schick, her testimony, by the way, is also on that page, is the ministry director for an organization called Help for Families, the number four. Denise's father was a transgender, didn't have alignment surgery, did have breast implants, lived his life, left the family when she was a teenager to pursue that lifestyle. And his niece had been molested. There was a lot of issues. Take her clothes to dress and drag. She has walked that life, saw what it did to her father. She has an organization, Help Family. She has done the research. We have people, PFOC in and of ourselves, have worked with four people that had breast implants, what have you. There is a brochure on our website, gender identity brochure as well, to address this issue. Because what's happening is, and people don't know this, they are trying to approve hormone delay drug for children. What they don't bother to tell you is when you give somebody the wrong hormone or you delay that, it can cause cancer, blood disorders. How about sterile? How about becoming sterile? Do you, you know, and then when you're 18 years old, you say, you know what? And we've seen this happen, and people can read her and listen to her testimony, go to her website. What happens? Child says, you know, I guess I was just, you know, I was identifying with someone else. I wasn't identifying with my own gender. There are books out there that help one, and Denise Lisa's author, two or three, learn, love, pays, act, and accept as a gift your sexuality. That's why God created the male. And so why would any parent, I mean, you know, you're going to let your six-year-old walk down the middle of the highway? That'd be less dangerous.
Yes,
I mean,
it's the truth.
Saying, we need to get parents involved, churches involved. I have put together the resources where people have the opportunity when they visit the website to seek information from these people. They will call you. They will talk to you. They will email. We will provide you with the resources. But we've got to stop this madness. It is child abuse. It is. I mean, it makes no sense to me that we would allow, and one does have to question, is, you know, what's the family like?
And, you know, I also question where are the pediatricians going to medical school? I mean, what are they reading that says that this is treatment for a child that comes in and appears to be effeminate as a little boy? Like, what are the pediatricians thinking as well?
There is an organization, the American Academy of Pediatrics. They have a website. They are in Florida. These are Christian pediatricians. You can certainly get their information, and they will tell you about the dangers and the risks. What people have to understand is that while many of us were not really looking at what was going on into the schools and into the medical field, go look at who some of the top-ranking people are running your schools, the AMA, the ATA. As I told you, the six out of the seven were gay. I mean, these people have worked themselves into key positions, and having equal access isn't working. But you can also research Dr. McHugh, and there's information about him on our website. He will tell you. He was the chief of psychiatry and would not allow, actually stop, realignment surgery at Johns Hopkins. Still is very active.
Because he knew it was not in his patient's best interest.
Correct. Because what does it change? And what we have found out, and what you'll find out in talking to Denise, as I said, we personally, as an organization, have raised money, and we now have someone coming to us again to have surgery and breast implants removed because they know it was wrong.
Right.
Now they're in their 20s, and they're saying, why did I do this?
Right.
It's not really who I am. Well, guess what?
It doesn't fulfill that need that they're searching to fulfill. Only Christ can fill that. Only Christ.
And we cannot allow. I mean, I don't understand, because you have to have psychiatric approval. I don't know, maybe it's a psychologist that, you know, holds a different point of view. But you can't just go give hormones without the pediatrician and a therapist getting involved.
Well, like you said, it's creating a whole bunch of other problems, the cancer, the sterility.
Right. And you know, what people don't understand, especially young people, and I'll be very bold about this, you can't change your sex. You can take off parts, add new parts.
Right. Correct.
And guess what? Go get a blood test. You know what your DNA is going to say? You're a man or you're a woman. You've changed nothing, but you're required to take hormones, look a certain way, and live a certain way. And that's when the dangers begin. Do you think you should be taking male hormones? No.
No.
And that's the point. So what you're doing is, because you gave them some new body parts, you're feeding them hormones that their bodies, regardless of the new part, were not made to ingest. And now we're going to do that to children. And it is happening in Berkeley. I mean,
That's not a surprise.
And hey, how about Children's Hospital in Boston? I think they were the first.
But it's wrong. It's inherently evil, and it's destroying these children for life.
It is for life. Many of them will never have, even though they will change, and a great percentage of them come back and want off the hormones, want to have, as I said, we're working with a young man right now that had breast implants. And then you have to find doctors and therapists who agree that he made a mistake. I mean, you know, interesting, isn't it? But anyway,
yeah.
we're trying to help these people come back with their biological sex never be changed. The Lord didn't make a mistake. He didn't give you a girl's body with a man's brain, because guess what? You wouldn't have developed as a girl if that had been the case.
Right.
Develop based on our birth. And I will agree that some people, you know, are born with maybe both sets of genitalia.
But we're not talking about those people here today.
No, and guess what? Those people, when they become adults and teens, do what? Their hormones will kick in, and at some point they will make that decision, and hormonally will know whether they're more male than female.
We're
not even waiting. Hey, let's pick out.
Right.
You know, really, I really wanted a boy anyway, or I really thought I wanted a daughter.
It's very dangerous.
Very dangerous. We're allowing adults to put children at risk And children, as I said, would you let your child walk down the middle of a highway? Absolutely not. But it's okay. Put their life at risk.
Regina Griggs, Executive Director of Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays, P. Fox, I encourage you to pray for her and her ministry. And I encourage you to go to her website, pfox.org, and educate yourself so that we can talk in a loving way about this and so that we can bring her organization to our churches, the Safe Exit Program. God bless you richly, Regina Riggs.
Thank you very much, and God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Homeworks Premium Thrift is a shopping experience unlike any other. Browse our 12,000 square foot store for gently used selection of clothing, shoes, books, kitchenware, home decor, furniture, appliances, and more. We offer free pickup of large loads and large items such as furniture and appliances. We are located in Douglasville on Route 422, and we are open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30, and closed on Sunday. Visit us at homeworkspremiumthrift.org. Like us on Facebook. We hope you'll stop in and check us out. You'll be glad you did. We help you help others.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets. So come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.
Hello, Pastor Darius. How are you? This is Carla DeDessi from Your Family Matters.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I'm going to introduce you. Shall I call you? How would you like me to address you? Reverend, Pastor, wise one?
Darius is fine with me. People call me Pastor Darius, Pastor Daniels. It doesn't matter.
Okay, I like that. But I'm going to call you Pastor Darius because I want people to know that you have authority in this area. So, Pastor Darius, you're the founder and senior pastor of Kingdom Church in New Jersey. That's our neighboring state. We can come over and visit you, which is a vibrant ministry that's grown into a congregation of more than 6,000 members. That's awesome. You have a bachelor's degree in political science and a master of divinity from Princeton Theological Seminary. And you have a gorgeous wife and two fabulous sons. But I am most interested, Pastor Darius, in your book, Represent Jesus, or Represent Jesus. How do you say this?
Yep, it's Represent.
That's right. So talk to us a little bit about this. I am looking at your book. I have read your book. I love it. I encourage everyone to go to Amazon and purchase it. But tell me, let me read a little bit, if you don't mind. Do you mind if I read some of your book?
That's just fine. Go right ahead.
So you start out, Pastor Darius, saying, have you ever been misrepresented? Strictly speaking, have your words ever been taken out of context, your activities misunderstood, or your associations judged? If so, you will probably concur that it can be a very frustrating experience. Then you go on to share that as Christians, we misrepresent God. God and Christ. So share a little bit about your journey, because you say in this book that you were misrepresenting Christ. And after I finished reading this, I said to myself, Pastor Darius, I said, gosh, I've been misrepresenting Jesus Christ in some areas. Very convicting book.
Yeah, this book is, it's really kind of my personal journey as it relates to my understanding of what it means to be a Christian, kind of expanding. So I wouldn't say that before this kind of epiphany I had, my understanding, I would say it was incomplete.
Mm.
And so this book is really kind of me sharing what I learned personally. And when I taught this to our congregation, what happened within our church was just so explosive. It was so inspiring. The impact, the feedback was just so overwhelming. But that's really what pushed me to put this in book form. It just kind of took on a life of its own. And, you know, that's what it's really about. It is for me, my issue was I had pretty much grown up in a tradition where I was taught greatly about the necessity and the impact of Jesus' death. I was clear on that he was the appropriate substitute for my sin, that when I placed my faith in him, that the Father is satisfied with that, and he takes faith that I put in Jesus and accepts that as Jesus going to the cross on my behalf. I knew all of that, but what I realized was that although Jesus died to be my Savior, he lived to be my example. And I knew a whole lot about his death, didn't know a whole lot about his life and how his life was practically supposed to be a pattern for mine. I mean, obviously, I would say, yeah, as a Christian, we're supposed to live like Jesus. I've been saying that as long as I was a Christian, but I realized several years ago that I did not necessarily know what Jesus was like. I had assumptions.
Right.
But I really didn't know what he was like, and I didn't know what it meant for me to live like him, because I confused liking Jesus with being like Jesus, and they're not the same.
And so did you delve into the New Testament? What did this look like to you to study the life of Christ and his interactions and his relationships?
Yep. It meant an extended period of strictly studying the Gospels only and really practically looking at his life and looking at basically character traits. That's what I was looking for, character traits. Not just John 8 with him interrupting the stoning of the woman who was caught in a sexually illicit act, but it was, okay, what did he do, but what does this tell me about him and what should this tell me about me? So I really kind of, I mean, I really didn't just read the Gospels, but I studied the person of Jesus in them. And what I came up with was, at least when I taught this to our congregation, it was like 6 months worth of material. Every single Sunday was Jesus and something. And with the book, we had to take all of those themes and kind of figure out what do we feel like were the most important and most consequential. And we chose 12 out of, I can't remember how many character traits that I came up with just by reading the Gospels. So that's where the material and the content came from.
In your book, you say, Pastor Darius, that there's a Barna study, which I think is really interesting. How do they depict Christians, non-Christians depicting Christians? What were some words that they used?
Yeah, so it's this project called the Fermi Project, group called the Fermi Project, and they commissioned the Barna Group to do this study. It's recorded actually in another book called Unchristian. But they really wanted to get a sense how Americans between the ages of 18 and under 30, can't remember the exact age, non-Christian Americans between the ages of 18 and under 30, how they actually perceived Christians. And the top five words that were used were homophobic, judgmental, hypocritical, too political, and sheltered in terms of kind of their worldview. Now, those were the top five out of people that they interviewed. Now,
did they have like some good things on there? I'm like cringing over here.
Yeah. And so the issue for me, because I know, you know, some say, hey, Pastor, the goal of Christianity is not to win a popularity contest. I get it. And I concur. My issue is not necessarily that Christians were not popular. My issue was, when I read that, was none of the words that they used to describe Christians Christians are words that can be used to describe Jesus.
I hear you, because he certainly was not judgmental of that woman that everyone wanted to stone and condemn.
Yeah.
Or the woman that came to the well pastor who had five husbands.
That's right. That's right. And I don't think that, obviously, I am aware that people's perception of our faith is often impacted by a number of different things. I get that. I understand it can be, their perspective of us can be jaded at times. And the truth of the matter is, the pastor that's feeding the homeless is not necessarily the guy on the news. The guy in the scandal is the guy that's on the news.
Right.
But the guy that's feeding the home, you know, you don't get on the news for loving your wife and raising great kids.
Right. I know, but that should be. I know, they say if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah. So I understand that. Yet at the same time, I think for me, what kind of gave this survey some validity, for me personally, was that I've been in the Christian context and in the Christian church all my life. I've been a Christian most of my life. And my experience with many Christians was reflective of that survey. Not all, but because as a Christian, I had those kind of experiences, it caused me to realize that we really have a brand problem, a growing brand problem in America that we cannot continue to dismiss and ignore. And as a younger pastor who serves the demographic that survey was based on, that demographic is a large part of our congregation. For me, I had a unique interest in making sure that we represent Jesus and represent Christianity to a generation that does not have a favorable view of. Now, if you reject Jesus, cool. I want you to reject the Jesus of the Bible, not the Jesus in your head.
Right, right. So give me some concrete examples. How can we as Christians do a better job and represent Jesus well? Because as you said, you even had people come up to you and say that being a Christian is not a popularity contest. And in reality, the fact is that it's hard, Pastor, because we need to be loving as Christ was. Yet, at the end of his 33 years on this earth, he was crucified because people hated the truth that he represented.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I again agree with you that this Barna study that says that Christians are being described by un-Christians as judgmental, hypocritical, insensitive, homophobic. I don't want that to be me. And yet we have to speak lovingly that marriage is one man and one woman, right?
Yeah.
And we have to speak lovingly that we have to protect life, all life. Inside of the womb. But we might be hated for that. But we have to say it. How do we do it in a loving way?
Yeah, I think
because
that's,
there's a lot of gray areas, right? Today, there's so many.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like even
and yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're the expert. Please.
No, I'm not the expert. I'm definitely on the path. I'm trying to figure this out. But in terms of concrete examples, this is what we really tried to do in the book.
Please,
I am very much. I'm very much a pragmatist. So for me, I think that's what led me in this study of the Gospels to try to figure out for me. Practically, it began with asking myself the question, okay, I am a, so right now, I'm older than Jesus was when he died. He died at 33. I'm 35. So I live longer. I have a wife and two kids. He didn't. My kids have to go to college. Hopefully, I get to retire. So there are a whole lot of things I have to think about that Jesus didn't think about.
You're never going to retire from Jesus, Pastor. I can tell you that already.
Yeah, not from Jesus, but some of the questions I had to ask was, what does it look like for me to live like Jesus? Because I can't live exactly like him. He's single. He lived in another part of the country, lived in another period of history. So it was looking at specific examples in the scriptures and then attempting to ask myself the question, what is the equivalent of that today? So let's take like John 8 with the woman who's caught in the act of adultery. I looked at, okay, practically, concretely, let's look at a few things. And it begins with asking some questions. Who is this woman today? Well, she represents anyone who had a private moral failure that has become public knowledge. That's who she represents. So that's the coworker who had too much to drink at the Christmas party. That is the student who did the wrong thing at prom and now everybody knows about it. It is the freshman at college who went to the frat party and drank it. if anyone whose private failures become public knowledge.
Yes.
Then you ask yourself the question, okay, well, what is the equivalent of throwing stones? Well, that's hurling anything that can cause injury to the person who engaged in that activity. So that could be those stones were literal, but other stones could be words. It could be comments that we post on social media sites. It could be a number of different things. And then I had to ask myself the question, when I look at the way I typically respond, people like this, which one am I in the text? Is my response more reflective of Jesus, or is my response more reflective of the religious? And for me, when I was going on this journey, my response was more reflective of the religious. I saw Jesus do several things very practically that to me were just eye-opening. Very concrete to me, very practical. The first thing he did, I mentioned these in the book, is he showed compassion for the person without condoning the activity. I mean, he engaged
yes.
her, he talked to her, but he never condoned the activity. Secondly, he communicated with her without compromising his stance. I mean, he wrote in the sand, he dealt with the Pharisees, but he wasn't dismissive. He wasn't get out of my face. He communicated with her, but he never compromised his position. And so for me, that was incredible. And then finally, he challenged her without condemning her. I think this is when people look at this particular passage, I think we overlook, to me, the most powerful part of the passage, challenge at the end. He tells her, all right, who's here to condemn you? She says, no one. And he says these words. She says, neither do I. But I put this in the Daniel's version. Stop doing that. Don't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Just go and sin no more.
Mm-hmm.
So he challenges her to live differently without condemning her personally. And
mm-hmm.
those are three, I think, concrete examples, three steps, three lessons, three principles that we can apply no matter who we are, no matter where we are in the world, no matter what period in history we live in. We can take these three principles, apply them. And to me, that's a concrete way of living like Jesus.
Let's talk a little bit about chapter 11 in your book, Represent Jesus, by Pastor Darius Daniels. You talk about, and you give a little personal testimony, that as Christians, because I grew up in the faith as you did, we think that you have to pray, which you do need to pray, and you have to read your Bible, which you do need to read your Bible, Pastor Darius.
Mm-hmm.
But you and that's how we're going to grow our faith. But if we're doing it just to check off boxes, then we're really not growing and learning. So in chapter 11, you talk a little bit about how Jesus views faith and how we should view faith and how we should grow our faith. Can you share a little bit about what you learned?
Yeah, sure. I think the statements that you made were incredible lead-in, because that was definitely the way I kind of approached it. It was almost as if I had faith in the disciplines,
yes.
not faith in God, that makes sense.
Great way
yeah,
to say
but,
that.
Yeah. And so I think when we grow in our faith, we grow in the disciplines, and the disciplines are a tool that God uses to help us grow our faith, but they shouldn't be they shouldn't be confused with faith itself, because Jesus actually, in his day, criticized some of the religious who were engaging in those types of activity. He said, you're praying, but you're praying for the wrong reasons. You're praying with the wrong motives. You're praying seen. He says, you're worshiping me, but like Isaiah says, he says, you're drawing nigh to me with lips, but your heart is far from me. And so Jesus really models me. He's the ultimate example of a life of faith. His death on the cross was not just an expression of his love for us. It was an expression of his faith in the Father, because all throughout his life, he was extremely confident that the Father was going to raise him up. He was telling us about it. And his life was an amazing example of that. And if you listen, not just look at his life, but listen to his language, you will see that Jesus saw God's word as faith food.
Mm, I love that.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy. Yes.
Yeah. If you just listen to his language, it's always just informal conversations. You just see scriptures coming out. It's written, have you not read? My
mm-hmm.
father said. He was over, just inundated with God's word. It, for him, was faith food.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the greatest lesson that we can learn in terms of ways to grow our faith. And
yes.
to see the scriptures as he did.
You're making me think of we are what we eat, yes. Talking about faith food, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
That has to be in your next book, Pastor. So talk to me about, I encourage everybody to get this book. I mean, I'd love to talk to you about, I think it was in chapter 5, where you talk about the submission word. You know, I love that you start out that nowadays it is the truth, Pastor. All of my friends, myself, every day, my husband and I are both so type A. It's always purpose, purpose, purpose. What's our purpose for this minute? What's our purpose today? What's our purpose for the new year, 2015? I mean, it's crazy. And I love this chapter because you bring it down to our purposes. Well, I'll let people read the book, but I don't want to give anything away, but I loved this book. Thank you for writing it. Tell us a little bit about your Kingdom Church in New Jersey. What's happening there? Why is it so unique?
You know, I think it's becoming less and less unique. When we planted 9 years ago, the type of diversity, I think, was, in my experience, extremely unique. You know, there are several layers of diversity, and our church was pretty reflective of almost all of them. Not as diverse in some areas as others, but I would say that's probably our greatest asset. Educational diversity,
It's really the body of Christ, right? The body of Christ is so diverse. We forget that sometimes when everybody goes to the Chinese church, everybody goes to the white church, everybody goes to the black church, everybody goes to the, the Pentecostal church. But the body of Christ is really diverse.
Yeah, so diverse. The age diversity is mind-blowing. Just, we have, their families with three generations within our church, the grandmother, the mother, and the daughter. So I would say that's probably what is most encouraging to me is that it's the diversity. It's reflective. It really is. I believe it's reflective of God's kingdom. And that's not a critique of other churches that don't have that type of diversity. That's not what I'm saying, but I am saying that is something for us.
Right. And that's a real positive for you. That's a real positive.
Yeah.
Where is your church located in Jersey? Because Jersey's a big state. Are you North Jersey, South Jersey, Central?
Yeah. Our main campus is in Central New Jersey.
Oh.
So we're in a city called Ewing.
Okay.
Which is, it's south of Princeton, maybe 5 miles or so south of Princeton. And we are right around the corner from a college called Ryder College.
So you have a lot of college kids, huh?
We have our fair share. Ryder, there are a few schools though in the area, Ryder's in the area, Princeton area. And so it's really, really exciting. We really love what God's doing.
And you said that that's your main church. Do you have satellite campuses?
Yeah, we have two campuses. So we have one in Burlington, New Jersey, which is about 30 minutes, I guess, south, headed toward the Philadelphia area. And so that campus is about 4 years old, and we're really excited about what's happening there also.
So at your The Kingdom Church in Jersey, how have you found practical ways to encourage your congregation to better represent Jesus?
Well, I really feel like,
home.
Yeah, I feel like practically this is, frankly, this is kind of my life's message in some way. So it's always going to come out practically in one form or another in my teaching. But I think the most impactful thing that we did is, how organizations have core values. We decided to have core practices, not just core values, but core practices. And so each time we dismiss our worship gatherings, we dismiss the worship gatherings with an acronym, reminding the congregation of an acronym, KING. So we encourage them, we dismiss each week, each worship gathering the same way, reminding them that according to 2 Corinthians 5:20, we're Christ's ambassadors, we're his representatives, we represent him. And one of the ways that we do it is by living like the King, which describes our core practices. So we want people to kneel, spend time with God, I invite others in, notice, so operate in love, notice the needs of people and meet needs, and then G, guard your own life. You won't live perfectly, but live responsibly so that your issues don't become a stumbling block for others. And so we always try to end the services with that, just practically through, practically reminding them of the importance of representing Jesus. But this message, it's throughout everything. We have our discipleship groups are all centered around this material. So when people join our church, they get in our grow group and they're learning to live like Jesus. And we took chapters of the book and converted them into small group classes. And so it really permeates everything that we do now at Kingdom Church.
Thank you, Pastor Darius Daniels, for being here with us today on Your Family Matters, 1180 WFYL. And certainly your book, Reproof. present Jesus, I pray, is going to just permeate families, make strong families for Jesus Christ that are representing Christ well and are ambassadors, to use your words to further his kingdom in a loving way. And how can we get in touch with you?
Well, everything is Darius, D-H-A-R-I-U-S. I got a unique spelling, but DariusDaniels.com and all the social media sites, it's all Darius Daniels. So they look, they can find me.
Great. Pastor, thank you so much for joining us. God bless you.
God bless. Take care. And greater things are still to be done in this city. For greater things have yet to come, and greater things are still to be done here.
Homeworks Premium Thrift is a shopping experience unlike any other. Browse our 12,000 square foot store for gently used selection of clothing, shoes, books, kitchenware, home decor, furniture, appliances, and more. We offer free pickup of large loads and large items such as furniture and appliances. We are located in Douglasville on Route 422, and we are open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30, and closed on Sunday. Visit us at homeworkspremiumthrift.org. Like us on Facebook. We hope you'll stop in and check us out. You'll be glad you did. We help you help others.
Your furry family members matter, too.
Hi, we're Gordon and Sue Kriebel, owners of Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a family-owned business located on Main Street in the Trap Shopping Center. It's a family experience at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, one you won't get at chain and grocery stores. You'll find a distinct difference at Perk Valley Pet Eatery, a difference in quality and in our natural approach to your pet's care. You may not be aware of better options for your pets, so come in and discuss your pet's nutritional needs and health. Our knowledgeable hands-on staff will be happy to help you learn what's best. We've been your leaders in pioneering pet nutrition and part of our community since 2003. Come out and support our local family-owned business. We'd love to meet you and your pets.